and welcome back to Scotland's premier Fife-based podcast, Fife Club. As always, the first rule of Fife Club is...
talk about Fife Club.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you lovely folk that have come back and joined us over the last few weeks. Always nice to see that someone out there finds entertainment in our inane chat. That said, it's probably time you seek some proper help. And anyone that's joining us for the first time, don't let that put you off. Come on in, put your feet up, make yourself at home, and enjoy. So we have a bit of a special episode this week, coming to you from our favourite comic book vendor and purveyor of quality pop culture and generally geeky paraphernalia, the Little Shop of Heroes. They are on the Maygate of the Kingdom's best town, Dunfermline, and we will fight anybody that says otherwise.
Hello.
Good morning.
So, yeah, as you hear, we've got some voices. So who do we have on the mics today? The ever-loving, hazily green-eyed Jamie.
Hello.
And our hosts and proprietors of this great store, the incredible Albie.
Good morning again.
And the astonishing Lou.
Hello.
Hello guys, and welcome to Fife Club.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
By here you mean in your shop.
I do mean in my shop, and given this morning's events, it is great to be here.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you for hosting us today. We obviously want to come in and just have a wee chat and a wee talk about how we ended up here and what you guys are all about, really. Yeah, so we've got a couple of questions that we're going to kick off. What was it that made this Emporium of Awesome seem like a good idea?
Folly.
Same with
there
us.
You go. Absolute folly. I was post jobs.
Fair enough.
I have got this incredible knack of closing major multinational companies down, I had successfully managed to close down yet another one, and found myself out of work. So, really on a whim. Which is not an ideal way to establish your business, by the way. I'm not saying that this is the best way forward for everyone, but pretty much on a whim and with the support of Lou, decided that we were going to open up initially retro shop. So that it was selling old comics, old games, old toys, all sorts of different kind of things.
We needed money.
We desperately needed money, and we thought, we've got lots of stuff. And other people might like to buy this stuff.
Yeah. So it started off as like a car boot sale, essentially.
It was basically a really nerdy car boot sale in an upstairs office in Dunfermline. Yeah, that's what it was.
For sure you started up there. Yeah. Jesus, yeah.
Yep, for a lengthy 2 months residency. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's everything in that shop was either previously owned by myself and Louise, or myself, Louise, and a couple of other people that we're friends with.
Yeah.
And we were just selling our stuff to get money.
That's a great way to get started, though, because you don't have to worry about initial stock or anything. You're just
It was Hobson's choice. We could either open something up with nothing in it, if we had to buy it, or we could open it up with all our own stuff. So we went for the all our own stuff option. And it was fantastic. It was the best thing that we could ever have done.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
It's kind of like living the dream in a way, because it's obviously, you know, things that you're massively into. And starting a shop for it, with loads of other people who are into it come along. I mean, I'm sure it's stressful as hell, but like.
Some people have described it as living a dream, others have described it as a delusional fantasy. So one of those is happens while you're awake. So that's the one we're living. We can't envisage seeing ourselves doing anything else at this point. This is where we are. This is what our future is. So we can't see ourselves doing anything else.
That, I mean, I think that's the thing, is that if you're at that point where, like, I know you've obviously struggled. You've had financial crises hit. You've had Tories pulling at our purse strings all the time.
Damn you, Tories. I'm shaking my fist at this point.
And of course, Brexit coming along. And, you know, all these things, I can imagine must be difficult for any independent, for for the big stores, never mind an independent.
Yep.
You're still here, and I think that's, you know, sort of testament to...
We are very fortunate. Mm-hmm. I think there's several reasons why we're still here. Mm-hmm. One is the assistance of our parents, to mm-hmm. be honest with you. Yeah. Without that sort of moral and financial support, we wouldn't still be here. Two, we've got really, really loyal customers mm-hmm. that come in, week out, buy their comics, come in to chat.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic. And three, from the perspective of a business, this isn't a fantastic idea, but we're not hugely motivated by money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're making enough to get by and to keep it going.
So our aim in life is to have enough.
Yeah.
And we don't need or want anything more than that.
Yeah.
And if you're in a comic shop, that's a good thing.
Definitely.
Because it's unlikely that you're going to get rich having a comic shop.
Yeah.
And if people do, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is like Forbidden Planet get a lot of abuse, but you know what? Before we were here, I went to Forbidden Planet.
That's where... Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was it. It's
I mean,
only...
I don't even read comics, but I go for other
things. There was
Forbidden
Planet and Deadhead in Edinburgh.
Absolutely.
You know, like I've said this before as well, like when you guys opened up and you did your pick list and your Dropbox, like that was like music to my ears. It was amazing because previously I'd had a couple of books coming to me from a comic shop down south, but they charge like £8 postage every month.
Yeah.
And so that was another £8 on top of it. If I wanted to go locally, I had to get on a train and go across to Edinburgh. And again, that wasn't all that feasible. Again, you were talking about the same price, basically, to travel back and forth once a month or every couple of weeks. You guys opened up right on my doorstep.
Yeah.
You know, I could see there being the opportunity of a hole in in the market on this side of the water.
We would love to say that we did the demographic studies and I did all my due diligence.
Yeah.
And then we sought out this location and opened up after many, many plans and business meetings and accounting. No, it was pretty much on a wing and a prayer and with no planning at all.
We just drove past and went, that shop's empty. Wonder how much that is.
Let's fill it with stuff.
And we just then went, we can give that a go, and went for it.
Was this shop the original... I can't remember what it was called, the music, I swear I bought my first bass guitar. It was a music shop, and then it moved further down in the Maygate.
This shop has been many things.
Yeah.
It's been a sort of holistic medicine type place. It's been a wedding cake shop. It's been a tattooist's. It has been a hairdresser's.
Brian from Hope was
it
in
has
here.
Been a clothing boutique.
Yeah, I remember.
Don't know whether it has been, but I know that there was a musical instrument shop in the street, and I'm not sure exactly what unit it is, but this has been a lot of things.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But then a lot of the stores down the Maygate have been over the years.
Yeah. So we're determined to buck the trend and actually be a thing.
Yeah, you've been here
way
probably.
Above like, well, most
longer
people
than most.
Well, we celebrated 5 years.
Yeah,
and that's there you go.
Again, that is amazing. I mean, 5 years of that means I've got 5 years of comics sitting in.
That's that 5 years. 5 years, or as I would like to call it, 7 Marvel reboots.
Is that how you count time? Like
we do.
Most people do it with wars. Brazilians do it with World Cup wins.
We count it in Marvel reboots. Although officially, there have been no Marvel reboots.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it's just
there are categorically no Marvel reboots.
Just changing timelines.
Just changing timelines, characters, and titles.
Yeah.
Just off of that, then, how did both of you originally, you know, get into comics? I mean, I'm not, you know, I think I've had a couple of books in here that I've come picked, some Doctor Who's and some other things. I never run out, I've read a few, you know, graphic novels. But I took, I think, probably the traditional Scottish route of things like The Bruins and Urwilly, Dandy, Beano, 2000 AD. Which was like, you know...
That's fair, I think. I think that's a fair assessment of how most people in Scotland get into comics.
Yeah. I think, again, because we've not had comic shops, we've not had that kind of the American influence. Mm-hmm. You're right, it was, there was a lot of whatever you could get at the newsstand.
Yep. I think
2000 AD being the, once you hit 12,
yeah,
that's all you were interested in.
My mum and dad bought the Sunday Post every week, and we got the Bruins and Ur-Willy in the Sunday Post. I got the occasional annual or sort of compiled book from Woolies.
Yeah.
My surname is Brown, so I'm always getting a Bruins annual when I was a kid.
Every second year.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
I got a few annuals. You couldn't get in. If I seen an American comic, I would get it, but you couldn't get them with any consistency. Yeah. So you'd read issue 420 of Detective Comics, and then the next comic you read was issue 474.
Yeah,
you were missing tons. There was nothing, but you were just you weren't reading it for the storyline. You were just reading it for the excitement of the single issue, which I think is a really important thing about comics, is that each individual issue should be exciting in itself. Yeah. It should have a beginning and middle and end.
Yeah.
Of its own,
yeah.
And that might be only 15-20 pages, and that's quite difficult to do.
Yeah,
But for people like us, when we were growing up, and there wasn't access every week to a series of comics, you know, that's what they had to be.
Yeah. That's like, you know, I mean, other than that, you know, that's exactly my experience. Was if I'd been in Edinburgh or Dundee, the comic shop in Dundee, I can't remember what it's called.
Black Hole. Just closed this year.
To be fair, 10 years ago, it seemed like it was hanging on.
Yeah.
So that's, but they survived a good long while then. How about yourself, Lou?
I didn't read comics.
Oh, nice.
So, again, I like geeky stuff.
So you're coming in on that side.
But I didn't actually read comics.
Side,
And I love art. I suppose art is a big part for me. Mm-hmm. That's in stories.
That's completely fair enough.
Yeah, I'm
always amazed by artists because I can't draw to save myself.
Well, but see, that's always been part of my in with them was I ended up doing art as my main thing at high school. Went on and tried to do art at university and at college and just never stuck. But, you know, it was things like comic books. It was the... I remember being... I must have been about maybe 11 or 12 when Panini started doing the reissues of Spider-Man.
Yeah, and they still do. Yeah. Panini still do the collected.
Yep. In there you would get, two or three books, of a storyline.
The perfect example, Esquadrón Suicida from Spain. it's the DC Rebirth, but it's not a DC Rebirth. It's a Panini.
Yeah.
And it's got three issues of Suicide Squad in it.
Right.
And so they're still in mainland Europe, that's a lot of the comics you get are Panini collections.
It. Yeah.
And in newsagents... Mm-hmm. It's Panini collections that you tend to get.
I just have to say, I love that seamless product placement as well. That was beautiful.
Yeah. Esquadrón Suicide. We cater for all nationalities.
I love it.
But yeah, like that's, I remember getting Spider-Man number one, The Amazing Spider-Man number one, and like it having a gold foil cover on it. And that was just like, fallen in love with the American comics from that point.
What year was this gold cover? Was it the 80s or early 90s?
I'd say maybe mid-90s. Late 90s.
Right,
95, 96, something
like that. They used to do a lot of foil covers and holographic covers and... You'd got trading cards on the covers. Mm-hmm. This was all to conceal the fact that the stories were very, very poor.
Do you know what, though? The very first one I remember...
Did you just get foil covers there? Like gaming magazines and everything back then, didn't you?
Yeah.
Loads of it.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Foil was it.
Someone invented...
Something shiny.
Someone discovered... foil. Someone discovered foiling.
And they went mad. Kids couldn't keep away from it.
They ran with it.
It worked. Holographic trading cards as well.
Yep.
That's something that I always remember getting.
But I was similar, like one or two, apart from what I said earlier, was I'd pick up an X-Men comic or a couple of Doctor Stranges as well, back then as well. But then I got more into, like, the cartoons.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I was the perfect age when they came, like, the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, X-Men, Spider-Man as well.
I went back, it came up on my Netflix, and I was like, do you know, I'm going to watch the first couple of episodes of that, see what it's like. It's, I remember X-Men being massively political, and it's even more political than I thought it was when I rewatched it. I mean, it always has cartoon. Been, but as a, in cartoon, even in cartoon form, I was like, holy crap, they're not, you know, they're not shying away from anything.
Sugar coating anything.
One of the many fantastic things about using a benign medium is that you can get away with a lot more. If you bring out a book and you are a political writer, you are overtly political, or if you're doing a movie and you're an overtly political person, then people immediately see the subversity and the politics and everything that you're trying to put across. Whereas if you do that in a comic book or in a cartoon, people's misconception is that those aren't things which you will find in those media.
Right.
So they're sort of on the nose. They're a little bit on the nose as well.
Yep.
Like naturally, as because of her form.
Yeah.
So it works part.
So you get you can. There's an opportunity to be very political or very subversive if you want to be within the pages of comics.
Comics. Yeah.
Less so with DC and Marvel because there's a huge sort of juggernaut behind those those organizations, and they're trying to protect their properties, so you're not going to get Batman suddenly doing something massively
Although then
political.
Again, I mean, look at things like the Dark Knight books. I mean, they delve into the, you know, the politics of the time anyway, and kind of deal with it. And then
Civil War
with the, but look at Red Sun, the Superman book, Mark Miller.
That's just
it's when they let art creators off their leash and and they are allowed to do non-main universe story arcs.
That's it. They can.
So
take it
then,
away.
That's when they're allowed to. They say, "Look, just go with it.
Do what you want."
It's like again, the one of the few books I've ever bought. You know, and here was the Doctor, the 11th Doctor line. And I remember, I think it was in the first or second book about they had. They were just slamming the DWP. By name, we're talking about benefits and stuff. Oh, this is great. Kids are going to read this. I love this.
And that's the thing. That's one of the fantastic things about having this shop is that people come in with a perception of... A lot of people come in with a perception of what we are doing or what we are selling, and they quickly find out that there's a huge range of material out there. I don't think there's anything wrong with the most cape-wearing, gung-ho, out-and-out, nothing-but-a-superhero character. Yep. I think that's absolutely brilliant. And I also think a fantastically political, deep, thought-provoking book is also fantastically brilliant, but I don't think one's better than the other.
So
if you want to come in and enjoy the world of comics by reading something that has got no politics in it at all and is... very much a surface-based comic. What you read is what it's about. Then I think that's absolutely fantastic. As long as it's well-written and well-drawn, then that's brilliant. I don't think... I think there's a bit of snobbery in comics, in graphic novels and comics, and people are always quoting the same... Whenever someone leaps to the defence of comics, they always quote people like Alan Moore. I love Alan Moore's work. It's never. It's not always brilliant, but it's always challenging. Thought provoking. But I think it's a mistake to always bring things like Persepolis and Mouse and Blankets and Watchmen. These things are all amazing examples of a graphic novel. But that doesn't mean that a single issue of a comic that's been running for 50 odd years can't be equally as brilliant.
Well,
it's not better because it's a graphic novel.
It's kind of like how I view Doctor Who in the rest of sci-fi, because I love Doctor Who.
If you can't guess, by the way, Jamie's a big Doctor Who fan.
Yeah, it can be a bit silly, but I'm into a lot of, like, you know, harder sci-fi as well, mainly. Like, I don't know, whatever. But
Battlestar.
Battlestar. But things like Arrival.
Arrival's
fantastic. But Doctor Who can be completely silly, but it can also have really bad episodes. But mm-hmm. then every, say, one or two times a series, it'll have fantastic episodes that sort of make you forget, you know, forgive the rest of the other stuff. Mm-hmm. You're just like, oh, whatever. And they're absolutely brilliant. But it does that thing of it's everything all at once.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's for everyone as well. There are episodes that aren't written for me, and that's okay. I sit there and enjoy them, you know.
Yep. Fantastic books, fantastic comics, fantastic TV. Mm-hmm. They transcend genre. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter to me whether it's a episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer
mm-hmm.
or it's the most highbrow TV series that's ever been conceived.
Yeah.
If it's The Wire,
uh-huh.
yeah,
or it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. If it's fantastic TV, it's fantastic TV.
That's it.
It doesn't matter to me whether it's Persepolis or whether it's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a brilliantly written issue
mm-hmm.
or then a brilliantly written storyline, that's what it is.
Yep.
It doesn't matter how silly it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing wrong with being silly.
As I say, Buffy's a perfect example of that. Amazing politics as well, but all just great dialogue, but also really fun mm-hmm. and really good.
Yeah.
And you're invested in the characters.
Well-shaped mm-hmm. and developed characters.
I mean, every
brilliantly written storylines.
Yeah. Every month I come in here and pick up Miss Marvel, Avengers, Spider-Man. And again, it's that same thing where you can read a couple of episodes where it is filler. There's mm-hmm. there's nothing much to it. You're just getting from one adventure to the next to get to whatever the next event is in it. Even then, when you get to those points, there's always something in there. There's always a comment or something that you can relate to. That is what brings me back to those books, every single time. And the escapism, and there's absolutely a worth in that. Because it's the kind of stuff I love, absolutely love. Any kind of out and out story, and I think in comic books they tend, you do get stories that recycle, and that does happen a fair bit, and then you also get some
it's true in every medium.
I mean, in comics, Christ, I mean, at the moment we've had events which were original, and then they're just bringing them back and just rinsing
it's difficult
them.
To bring out a new storyline every fortnight for 75 years.
Yeah, it is, definitely. But at the same time, they still manage to put twists on it or change it up or bring in a new character that's maybe got some kind of power or something that we've not seen before mm-hmm. or hasn't challenged the hero of the story.
Yep.
This is Sinead
arriving. This is the third human part of Little Shop of Heroes.
Third wheel.
She's now coming in. It's only 10:10, so she's only 10 minutes late, technically speaking.
Docker paid.
If you third own the business, then there's very little that can be done about that.
Fair enough.
You're talking about something in every issue. Uh-huh. Now, Lou, Sinead, and I don't really read Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
But we don't not read Marvel because we think, Marvel.
Mm.
Because it comes down to the snobbery. Yeah. I don't read Marvel.
Well, there's also the continual flame war of DC and Marvel
It's been difficult to love Marvel recently because of the not rebooting issue. But again, sometimes you're flicking through a comic and it's not even the whole storyline and it's not even the characters. Sometimes you'll just see a panel.
Yeah.
And you think, wow.
Exactly, yeah.
Of the last 100 comics that I have read, mm-hmm. that panel mm-hmm. is stunning.
Yeah. And you'll go back to
it. I saw one on Twitter just recently.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it was Doctor Strange, but Doctor Strange was in it. Oh, what comic was it? I had it spit out, I can't remember.
And I'm blown away when that happens because I think of the time constraints the artists and the writers have. And the fact that it's not just an artist and a writer, it's a colourist.
Just as well,
A letterer, an artist, and a writer, all combining, who could be in different countries all over the world from one another, and they all combine and bring this amazing mm-hmm. piece of genius out. And you think, what an incredible achievement.
Yeah.
And it's quite humbling also because I have little talent. And I look at it and I think, how?
Yeah.
It's conceivable that I may be able to create something like that if I had
X amount
a
of
month.
Time.
Yeah.
And thousands of revisions to it.
Yeah.
But they're these guys are just rattling this stuff out, and it's unbelievable.
It's, I mean, the thing like with the colouring as well is like, you know, you can get somebody who'll draw, who'll pencil and ink a great picture, but then it's when it goes to the colourist. I think DeviantArt's quite a good one, in where there's some people that will stick up just a pencil drawn and then just say, have at it.
Yeah.
And then it's like below it, you've got 20 different interpretations, and it's amazing how different that one drawing changes, like from one person to the next, how they've gone about colouring it.
It's shocking how little credit actually letterers and colourists get. Everyone always remembers the artist and the writer. It is absolutely shocking how little credit the colourists and the letter get, because the work that they do on the comic completely transforms.
Yeah.
The emotional ride you get through that comic.
Yeah.
You could read a comic with a particular colourist that you don't enjoy their style, and a different colourist could go on that title, and that title could suddenly, to you, become the best thing that you've seen for decades.
It's just because it's drawn you in.
And the same thing happens with a bad letterer can ruin the experience of reading a comic.
And that's the thing. It's phenomenal. Whole thing, I remember, like, the rise of the PC and that, where they talked about, it's lettering's just going to be done by computers. It's just done, but it's never happened yet. And it's because there's so many different things you can do that help tell that story.
Yep.
Just in the way that it's down. It's like, again, your speech bubbles, the way that the lettering's, you know, it's a quiver in it, can give you what's happening in that person's voice. Yep. You've got to tell a story.
And the letterer doesn't just take the words and put them in a random speech bubble. They actually do consult with the writer also and say and advise and say, look, I think in this particular frame it would be better if this was being said rather than that.
Yeah.
And there's a great letterer in Scotland, a guy called Colin Bell,
who
works on a ridiculous amount of titles and it's got a very distinctive style, but his style of lettering is fantastic and it does enhance the experience of reading the comics.
Yep, totally.
Yeah. Do you want to get involved? No.
Sinead's a silent partner.
Fair enough. What was... where were we? So, yeah. It's a bit of an obvious question, and it'll probably be an obvious answer, but why Dunfermline? Why Fife?
We're trapped here.
It's
like a wormhole. We have tried to escape, but we always get sucked back in. Yes, no.
That actually sounds very familiar.
No, we lived in Fermanagh.
Yeah.
Lou moved here when she was 12. Sinead was born here.
Mm-hmm.
I was born here.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of family in Dunfermline. I happen to think it's a fantastic town, and I happen to think it's got incredible potential.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because it's historically incredible that we've got all of this on our doorstep.
Yeah.
700, 800 years of Scottish history.
Literally on your doorstep.
Literally on our doorstep.
It's whenever friends come to visit and walk around, especially if they're from another country.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is just all here, just this palace. It's just the palace.
Yeah.
So, when was this built? This was built 800 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know 800 years ago was a thing. If you're a creationist, was that not when the world was created?
I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but an American-Canadian friend of a friend came over, I was showing him around Edinburgh. And I was like, this is a new town. And I'm like, how old is this? I don't know, about 200 years old or something. I'm like, your new town's older than my country. That's ridiculous. Yeah. I was like,
So we love that. We love that about Dunfermline.
Yeah.
But we also happen to think that it's a fantastically vibrant place.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an incredible music scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an increasingly great art scene.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we've got...
There's always been tons of artists here, but now you've got like Fire Station.
Fire Station Creative.
As well. Yeah.
The Abbott House is going to be reopening next year, and that's going to be a creative space also.
That's amazing.
We've got a new museum and art gallery, which was voted the best building in Scotland. We've got all these fantastic things on our doorstep, and I don't believe that you should limit yourself to what can be achieved in Dunfermline. And that's why we do the Comic Con in Dunfermline also, because people told us, oh, you can't do that in Dunfermline. You can't have potentially the best lineup and most diverse lineup of artists and writers that are going to be in Britain this year in Dunfermline. Well, why can't you have that in Dunfermline?
There's space.
Nonsense.
That's what I find amazing about this place, because I remember when you guys started up there and I thought, you know, there's been a lot of things I've loved in Dunfermline but haven't succeeded, like the Honey Funk Night.
Right, okay.
What's her name?
It was just Emma.
Who I've only ever met outside pubs when I've been wasted, so I sort of know her to say hello to. That's about it. But she organised a fantastic night in a pub in the old
it's Monty's.
Monty's, upstairs before Monty's. It was remodeled, And she got bands that are on, like the T-shirt I'm wearing, like the True Thoughts label, and you know, Ninja Tune people, those sorts of people who would never come to Dunfermline before, and she's getting them to play here, and it was fantastic. I was like, oh my god, it's all
and
music
it was
I'm
all,
into.
It was always packed
here.
As well.
Yeah, and it was always packed, but you still worry about, you know, they still couldn't quite make it work, and I really, you know. I loved it. You guys started, but I was like, "Oh man, I hope they make it." But I kind of thought, "Oh, maybe they won't." But you have, and you made it really big. You know,
it's we run a business which isn't financially viable.
Okay, so
I get you.
Okay, so if we were to go to a bank or an accountant, they would look at our accounts and they would say, "You don't have a business, do you?" And we would say, "Well, we've got hundreds of fantastic people who come in and see us every week and buy things and whose lives are enriched by what they buy here. And our lives have been enriched by meeting them."
Yeah, exactly.
And we've got, not every month, but most months, just enough money to get by. So we do have a business.
Totally. I mean, that it's interesting because it also kind of brings me around to that thing that, that there has been a community that's risen up and grown up with you guys. I mentioned this last time I was in, like every time I'm in here, there's people in, there's people talking to you. You have guys down in your games room. You know, there's always a vibe about the place. Free comic book day, folk dressing up, at, you know, coming in. You know, any excuse really to dress up and come in, and that's it's amazing that you're that you, that has grown up around about you, and you have obviously nurtured that as well. What is it like being that kind of central pin or one of the central pins to that that community?
Do you want to take that, Lou? No,
I don't know.
It's incredibly enriching to our lives for that to be the case in every way other than financially. And that's the least important way that it could possibly be enriching. I could, sometimes I see vans going past and they've got business names on them and I think, is that someone's life choice to be a, I don't know, a grommet salesman? And maybe it is, and that's fantastic because I know little about the world of grommets and it could be incredibly interesting. But we do sell stuff that's really interesting and we attract people into the store who are also very interesting. And that makes our lives a real thrill, to be honest with you, because every day we come through the door and the one thing we can guarantee is that we're going to have conversations with people over a huge range of subjects, and nothing is taboo in this shop. You are allowed to express your opinion freely, as long as there are no children present. But yeah, we encourage people. We encourage a vibrant discourse in the shop, and that's brilliant. It's a fantastic thing to have, and it, it's quite gratifying. We do take some satisfaction from the fact that people have gravitated here and continue to come here and have made friends with us or have made friends with other people And yeah, communities have sprung up mm-hmm. from the shop existing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a fantastic thing.
And there are some people who are now going to be getting married after meeting at the shop.
Oh, amazing. So, I mean, that's, you're like blind date.
That's just awesome. Yeah.
I am. I have been likened to Dunfermline Scylla. That's
and
true.
And again, watching children grow up, children that, oh, you yeah. know...
That's my weekend name.
Yeah.
And being young children and then coming in looking and then reading comics and then... wanting other things to go with the, yeah. the comics that they're yeah. buying and it's great. And we've had children that were first year in high school and now they're away
yeah.
to uni.
Uni, yeah.
Oh, and crazy. We've just seen them and you know, they were like 12, yeah, 13 and now they're 17, 18 and yeah, there's boys that are now like 6 foot and they were small and coming in with their parents. And,
but again, that's something that's amazing just, because you've been part of their...
It's great.
Their adolescence, their childhood, yeah. you've been here in yeah. a staple of
literally
it.
Formative
yeah yeah, yeah. Like, yeah.
That's probably it's... the most thrilling thing is when you see someone coming in, a parent coming in with their child uh-huh. and this child could be just at the point of being able to walk sort uh-huh. of, and then they get a pick list
mm-hmm.
and uh-huh. so they get and then they come in every month and open up the drawer and take yeah. out their comic, whatever it may be
mm-hmm.
and that person might be 8 or 9 now,
yeah,
whereas they were very young when they came in.
Yeah.
And you can see that having access to these things has actually enriched their life. It's made mm-hmm. their life better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they've got their own folder, so they're like, Dad, it's, they open the drawer and they take out the comic and mm-hmm. they come up to the counter and they pay for it it's, themselves. And you know,
and we converse with them in the same way as we would do with anyone else.
And that's, again, something that's important, I think, with kids today because, I mean, we've got... I think everybody's got really kind of lazy with the way that we can shop and mm-hmm. the way we can buy things. And the kids that are growing up with that are just going to become even more lazy with it, I think. Yep. But having experiences like this where you can come in and you can go, there's something for you, you know it's there,
right.
you pick it, you bring it up. You know, there's yeah. there's that whole...
And they ask us, they ask Sinead a lot. For her opinion on what's a great thing to buy, what's this, what's that, uh-huh. and yeah. Sinead helps them. And there's a fantastic incident earlier this week or last week mm-hmm. when she was mm-hmm. Sinead was approached by a gentleman on the train, not in a bad way.
That's just, yeah, I was like, where's this going?
Who told her that, who thanked her
mm-hmm.
for what she had done for his very young daughter mm-hmm. in recommending a book because he said that she had changed her life.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Amazing.
And frankly, you can't buy that.
No.
Yeah.
And no amount of money mm-hmm. can pay for that feeling.
Yeah. But it's that connection that yeah. people, you know, will feel with, you know, you guys and mm-hmm. this place as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's only going to build because they'll have friends and brothers and sisters who, you know, they'll bring yeah. up through yeah. all as well. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's...
Because we are a family, so our shop, it's a family, and like then the customers become like our family.
An extension
in it, and it just
it.
Keeps... getting yeah. bigger and bigger
uh-huh. yeah.
and that's what's so great about it.
I do joke that I dislike everything and everyone, but I dislike the people who come in here the least.
No, well, that's...
so long as you're within the bounds of the shop. As soon as you walk out that door.
Oh yes, you're dead to me once you leave the shop. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I can certainly appreciate that sentiment. I deal with the public in my day job and
well, I've been in retail for
a long time
and I have to say that we haven't had a bad experience in 5 years in this shop.
No,
I think it's the vibe. I think the type of people who are coming in are mm-hmm. coming in because they want to have a good experience.
Yeah,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
not looking for an argument or looking mm-hmm. for a confrontation. They're in because they look. Nothing we sell is, it's all spiritually very important,
yeah.
it's all very nurturing, but it's nothing in here matters
yeah.
from the perspective of you needing it.
Yeah, that's it.
So people come in a good mood generally mm-hmm. because they're coming in to buy something to either treat themselves
yeah.
or someone else.
Yeah,
and that family feel you mentioned, I mean, I used to come here every so often to pick up books for myself and a friend and things like that, but... You know, even Bob was only in very yeah. randomly. That's the feeling I got when I was in here.
And that's what I say. Really, you know, good. I come in, I'm one of the people that comes in, grabs my pick list,
yep.
gets it, you know, boarded up and pays for it, wee bit of chat, yep. and then I'm out again.
But you know what? That's it. That is that's everything that I want from it. And again, that feeling that you come in and you feel that you're welcome. You feel that you can just sit and have a chat. If you know, if I wanted to stay longer,
brilliant. I wouldn't. Well, that's the grand illusion we're trying to create.
it's like us
behind
podcasts.
That illusion.
It's you behind the curtain.
It is me. We are. And someone is behind the curtain. Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's like what we want with the podcast, and what people do keep coming back telling us, and every time we hear it, we love it. Is that what we want it to be at the moment? Anyway, is to feel like you're at the pub with your friends.
Yep.
And the amount of people that do come back, we've had friends tell us that, we've had friends that are across the world who don't get to see us and are just like, it's brilliant. But they're like, it's brilliant because, you know, it gives me that little bit of home. But then we've also had people, like I was saying, there was a guy in the Philippines that I'd put it out to on a Facebook group, and a guy in the Philippines came back to me and said, I had to listen to a couple of episodes. It's amazing. It felt like I was sitting in a bar with you guys. And it was just like, the Philippines? There's a different culture. You feel like you're sitting in a bar with us?
Yeah.
We're talking shit about shit. And just like,
just
what?
Like being in a bar.
Yeah. That's very true.
It's just that, you know, that we can get that from a world audience as well.
It's like good with anything, though. Yeah. Like the new place me and Dave are training at, Braveheart, Stevie Ray's place, MMA place. Like, being at other gyms, they feel like home, but now I've only been there for 2 or 3 weeks, and now it feels like home.
Yeah.
You know,
and
because you're rolling around on the floor with sweaty men, you're instantly friends with them. So it's like,
I think if you're going to have your own business, then there's no point in being like a multinational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not to say that you can't, there are businesses out there that are owned by individuals and aren't massive, but what's the point in us having a family business if it doesn't feel like a family business?
Yeah.
You can still get the same level of professionalism and you still get the same efficiencies.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't feel like going to shop in a multinational. It should feel like coming into a family business.
Yeah.
And again, the thing with that is that multinationals and big, you know, big companies should be taking more lessons from the little shops.
No, they have departments. They have the whole departments of people trying to create an environment.
But you can't artificially create it.
That's the problem. Is that the problem with these companies is that they're far too big a juggernaut to understand. There's too many people that are more interested in finance and money and the bottom line. That you'll never get that, I think.
Every decision that they make based on customer service has to go through a sieve of the accountants.
Yeah, and that's my experience.
that was the business I worked in. I worked in Music Zone, I worked in Our Price, I worked in Virgin, I worked in Jessup. You notice I'm reeling off all these companies I alluded to earlier.
Paragons and
the Jonah of multinationals rears his head again. So if you really hate a particular company out there, folks,
the Jonah of St. George, he's slaying
and you
the
want
dragon.
It and you want to close down, get me in there for a few weeks. I guarantee you. My bond.
You know the administrators on first name basis.
You know what? Actually, I think I do.
Oh dear. But it's all good. One other thing that, I mean, we've kind of touched upon it and talked a little bit about it, but again, with the community that has built up, is that part of the reason why you felt that Dunfermline Comic Con would work? Most definitely.
Yes. Again, you're giving us more credit than we deserve. We didn't do it because we thought it would work. Uh-huh. We did it because we thought it should be done.
It should be done.
But that's you need for, you know.
Yeah, so we just kind of go for things that it all works out at the end.
Go for it.
Just having faith.
And I know that makes us sound very reckless, and in some ways we are.
Mm-hmm.
We're also incredibly methodical.
Mm-hmm.
About our recklessness.
Right.
We were reckless in our decision making. We're always reckless in our decision making processes, in that we always make a decision based on what is the best thing that we could do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we don't factor in what can we afford to do, because the reality is we can't afford to do anything. So we would never get to that point of going, oh, we can afford to do that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So throw that one out. You don't, if you throw that out, that liberates you to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do once that reckless decision has been taken, we then do everything possible to make it absolutely the best thing that we can make it. Uh-huh. So there's nothing reckless about our choices in what we're going to do and who we're going to have and how it's going to be organised. But the initial decision-making process, we remove money from the whole... We always remove money from the equation, and that is incredibly liberating and terrifying.
But you know, it's a kind of, if you build it, they will come sort of thing.
It is, yes.
But you have to take a risk.
You do.
But why take a risk unless it's something you want to do anyway?
Yeah.
Apologies to whomever it was that was trying to phone me. It's... you do have to take a risk, and it does require a degree of recklessness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is terrifying and amazing at the same time.
Yeah.
Because then after it's finished, you're just, wow, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah.
Just
and did you've that. Pulled
and
it
doing
off.
Something you love as well. And something it's you want just, to be, something you want to happen in the town.
And we do, we are the kings of the magnificent folly. So, we think that the aim is always worth the risk.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's like this podcast. Eh?
And at some point,
costs us nothing.
You know, at some point, you may get burned.
And
if that does happen, we will be burned very, very severely. We're always all in.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no security blankets. There's no parachutes.
Yeah.
We are all in on these things. Yeah. So for us, if it either wipes its nose, and for us, wiping its nose means that the charity that we've created gets to put books into all the secondary schools in Fife.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about this.
Yeah, 10% of all the adult ticket sales go towards buying books for all the secondary schools in Fife.
Oh, that's great.
This is just that a is, new...
Yeah.
So that for it to wipe its nose, that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't, what that means is we could lose our house and our business.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So those are the sort of... That's the scale of risk that we take.
That you're taking on.
And because it's entirely self-funded as well. It's entirely all the money that pays for the con comes from tickets to the con. And at the end of it, it's a not-for-profit. Mm-hmm. So at the end of it, nobody, i.e. the three of us, don't get any money from it.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to have £4,000 or £5,000 to buy for books for charities and to pay for everything. And that's the success.
And
then we start again from zero again the next year.
Work it up from
but
there.
Each year that we do it, the potential on that day, at the end of that day, is that we know that at the end of that day we could go home and go, right, well, we're losing the house and we're losing the business. It's kind of tense.
Yeah,
the closer it gets to the date.
Right.
Yeah. So please buy tickets.
It's as simple as that. If people buy tickets, then it works.
Yeah.
If people don't buy tickets, it's a fantastic day out for those people who are there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And horrifying for us.
I incredibly haven't been yet, I think.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. Like, it just hasn't happened. Yeah, it's selling out the first year, I think.
Yeah, we had 2,500 the first year because that's what that's all we could fit into the Glen Pavilion, which is why the second year we just went for it and got a giant marquee.
As well.
We had over 4,000 people the second 4, 000, year.
Really? Amazing.
Yeah.
And this year's marquee is even larger.
Oh, wow.
So, but again, there's that thing where, you know, you have seen that, you know, there's, you know, definitely an appetite for it and people are coming.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that, you know, being in Dunfermline is quite central to the central belt? You've got Edinburgh, you've got Dundee, Glenrothes, Kirkcaldy, you've got... Are people coming in from all round?
Yes, is the answer. Last year, first year, fewer. last year more, this year hopefully more again. It's a very small country. There's no reason why.
Yeah,
well, I think it's more difficult to get someone from Glasgow to travel to Dunfermline than it is to get someone from Dunfermline to travel to Glasgow. Yeah, so we're always going to suffer from that. But it's very central. There's fantastic transport links. Sort of 90% of the population of Scotland live within an hour of here. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to get 5,000 people to come.
Yeah.
And 5,000 people is kind of our target.
Yeah.
If we get 5,000 people to come, the charity gets good money, everyone gets paid, it's happy days. So there's no reason why that shouldn't be the case. We have faith that that will be the case. Frankly, it's Sinead that does the curating of all the guests. And the lineup of guests is unbelievable. I mean, and intergenerationally also, there's people who are at the start of their career but are going to be hugely influential. And there's people who have been in the business for 40 years and are still massive figures. And also there's people who are artists and not known necessarily for comics but are just incredible artists. She does a great job of curating it and persuading people to come from Los Angeles to Dunfermline for one day.
Does that work? Do you pay for like for bed and board and
everything?
Travel,
we pay for everything.
Hotel.
From the second they leave their door, wherever in the world they are, to the second they get back into their house, we pay for everything.
So yeah, we have people from United States, Ireland, Finland,
Russia. Canada. We've got people from all over the world coming. The con will cost about £45,000.
Wow. And how much are tickets?
£10.
Okay.
Great. What was I thinking there? Something a lot.
It's snowing.
Snowing.
Oh, fantastic. Just what we need. The ticket price.
It's like Hoth.
It's very much like Hoth.
Yeah, what we want to do with the podcast is, show that for, people of a certain age that there are things to do here. There's quite often that complaint, there's nothing to do.
Yep.
Teens, adults alike, it's only drinking that you can do in Fife.
There's two ways to approach that, I think.
Uh-huh.
One thing is to look at all the things that you can do, of which there are many.
Yeah.
There are lots and lots of things that you can do. Excuse me, I'm just going to move outside of the counter. There are lots of things you can do in Fife, and there are lots of things you can do in Dunfermline. There's no end of things.
That's it.
But if there's not something that floats your boat, how's about this for an idea? Why don't you start something?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's the whole impetus. I mean, it's all Kutch, but that's all the work for this. we just show up, but that was your sort of...
Yeah, it was just like, we listen to podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
We all of us are big, big podcast listeners, especially in the last sort of 5 years or so. We've all got a collection of ones that we listen to and we reference and talk about. And what's great about them is that when you're not with your friends... podcast feels like you're with your friends. A good podcast, it feels like you're with your friends.
Like this shop.
Yeah, exactly. And it's nice to have that. And it was like, I think that we've got the potential to do something like that. Can we do it?
Yeah.
And you and me one day just sat down with a mic and had a chat.
Yeah.
And that was the first episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it grew arms and legs.
Yeah. And why can't... Not everyone is going to be able to do something which turns out to be massively successful or even successful at all.
Yeah.
But that's not the point of doing it. The point of doing it is that you think, well, there's a thing I would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do it.
Yeah.
And then you get joy from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully others people do as well.
Yeah.
But, sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. And then you maybe try something else.
Mm-hmm.
Or you continue. I mean, if I were doing a podcast, it would be probably banned on all platforms.
We've not managed yet.
But would it
come close?
Would it be gratifying if lots of people started listening to it?
Mm-hmm.
It would be.
Exactly.
Yeah, would I continue doing it if no one was listening to it? Yes, I probably
would. That's what I think.
We're
very much in that space.
Yeah, we'll do it until We'll do it until nobody's...
I am vain and self-obsessed. So even if it were only me listening back to myself, I would find great joy in that.
Oh, I can't. I never listen to the podcast because I'm always on it.
That's
I can't,
the thing.
Oh, I can't listen.
All of them. None of them. Well, bar the guys that have come in, like Dave, James and Mags, who weren't part of it originally and now
they're
are.
They're a rotating Angus Deaton.
Because we had our friend Beatty, who was with us for the first, what?
But he died.
He died, did you say?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He was back on a couple of weeks ago, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah. He died to us. But he decided he just
on
didn't
the
want
third
to do
day,
it.
He reappeared on the podcast. Yes.
He decided he didn't want to do it. And we had three guys who'd already been on with us just randomly that were interested in coming back on. So we said to them, look, we're gonna have I Got News For You this, and open up his seat as the Angus Deaton seat and have a rotating guest. So yeah, they're now part of it, and each week one of them comes on, and every now and then we have multiple people in, and it gets messy. But we tried to keep it to roughly about four people, because it's a lot of voices.
But it's the endeavour, it's the doing it that's important.
It gets us together.
Miley Cyrus put it best. She said, it's not about how fast you get there, and it's not about what's waiting at the other side, it's the climb.
That is wisdom from Miley Cyrus.
Miley is a genius.
But yeah, it's
crafty
part
pop
of it.
Songs all around, actually. Yeah.
Pop songs are awesome. Great pop song is an absolute joy.
I agree. And that ties back to like what we were saying earlier about it doesn't matter, you know, what form somebody takes. Because I love great crafty pop songs as well. As long as they're good, I hate terrible pop songs.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of really good ones these days.
Yes, there are. And Hanson Mbop is a fantastic pop song.
Oh, yeah. 1989. What an album. Telling you. Fantastic.
But you're right. It's about saying it doesn't matter how lofty the thing is. It can be brilliant.
It doesn't matter.
That's...
I hope that's true of our podcast, because it's the only thing we're clinging to.
It's a good excuse for us to get together. I think there was a point when we weren't seeing one another all that often.
Yeah. Or we'd see each other separately.
Yeah, and then, again, like, there was just that perfect storm of Mark coming back up from London, and, you and me decided to start this, and just like I say, it's grown arms and legs, and it is what it is now. And everybody hates me talking about it because that's all I talk about these days.
Again, there's nothing wrong with having pride, though. There's also nothing wrong with having pride in what you're doing.
I think that's a big element.
Is there something wrong with shilling it every single opportunity you get with Kutch?
No.
It is pretty much what I do.
It's shameless.
It's like on a Friday I go into work with my Fight Club t-shirt on.
Quite
as well.
Right.
It's
just like we shamelessly self-promote. I mean, look, our logo is us.
Yeah.
For heaven's sake. It couldn't be more shameless self-promotion than our shop's logo ourselves.
It gives you that idea of the community and the family, and you know, that says more about the shop than what the shop is, I think.
Yeah.
And there's
nothing wrong with being proud of what you do
and
enjoying what you do and wanting other people to experience what you're doing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's some sort of...
Oh, we
people
go
always
for the
say, oh,
lesson.
No, humility. Humility is important. No, it isn't.
Yeah.
Humility isn't important. What's important is not being an asshole.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with being proud in what you're achieving.
Totally.
Oh, God, it's proper snowing.
Oh, it's giant snow.
Giant snowflakes.
Actual
that is amazing.
Snow.
And it has covered everything immediately.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Did not expect
that. It is like Hoth, then. Go outside and get tied up in a cave by a yeti-like sock puppet.
What are we sitting
A wampa.
A wampa. I couldn't remember the name, but it was doing
which,
my head in.
Which, incidentally, we are going to have at Dunfermline Comic Con next year.
Oh, what? Oh. Really?
Oh, yes.
My God.
God, I thought these things smelt bad on the outside.
Oh, lovely.
First time every now and then I go out deer stalking with a friend, and the very first time, that was as soon as he opened it up, I was like, I thought these things smelt bad on the outside. And he just looked at me and was like, well done.
Classic. Are we? Yeah. Are we going to do a fight club? Or
yes, I think, well, we're at the hour
very
mark.
Quick.
We'll do a quick fight club. Welcome, one and all, back to the specially constructed imaginary nine-sided nonagon for another fantasy fight club. I suggest you all settle in, for we have another tremendous fight card for you good folk out there tonight. If you're not familiar with the format yet, then I shall explain. Each of us pits two fighters into the nonagon to battle. These fighters can be anyone or anything. We then mull over their faults and merits and how we think the fight would go. We then all decide on a winner. So let's get ready. Let's get ready. Let's get ready to ramble.
Well, can I go first?
Yeah.
It's a very quick one, but as it's Little Shop of Heroes, I thought instantly of you and Lou as Seymour and Audrey versus an Audrey 2 plant.
Okay. That would be interesting. Well, the Audrey 2 plant would most certainly win. Because Louise and I are barely above infirm. So we would neither be able to fight it nor run away from it. We would just be subsumed by Audrey.
But you could have a great music one.
All I would be able to do would be to gently push Louise in front of me.
That's what I was going to say. You're
so stronger, she, in the hope that Audrey's hunger would be sated before it got to me.
But there's a lot more of you.
There is a lot more of me. Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful.
That's
great.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
That's wonderful. You would use her as a human shield.
I would.
Fantastic.
Yes. A human meat shield.
I don't think we've ever had anybody use somebody else as a shield yet.
No, but it's no, good. It's a great tactic. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And it goes back to the family vibe we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. You first.
Yeah, it's such a gentleman.
Wonderful. Wow, okay. That was quite quick, yeah. I've got an obvious one. It's a classic as well. It's a bit of a DC versus Marvel. In one corner, we have Barry the Flash Allen, and in the other we've got Peter Quicksilver Maximoff. Which one of the speedsters do we think would win in a fight?
I'll defer to you guys.
I think Maximoff, because Peter is too nice and Maximoff would do whatever it takes.
Yeah, see, that my thinking is that he, because he's
Barry Allen.
He is forever switching sides. You can't really trust Maximoff.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
Untrustworthy.
Yeah. Whereas Barry Allen's an absolute choir boy.
He's a goody two shoes. Yeah.
Proper.
Always back the sort of twisted, untrustworthy one, I think.
But then, Barry Allen.
Like you.
Yes. I am nothing if not disingenuous. Or am I?
The thing with that, though, is that Barry Allen always wins the day. Or he changes time.
Or, I suppose, a more accurate judge of who would win that battle would be who had the publishing rights.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Or owned the movie rights.
which Peter, which Maximoff are we going for? And which Barry Allen are we going for?
At the end, you have a break in the fourth wall sort of thing. And it's revealed the ultimate boss is the artist. The ultimate bad guy.
Tell you who wins that battle. Disney.
Disney, yeah.
Disney wins all battles.
Yeah. They really are ramping up at the moment.
Although on plus side, we could get a new X-Men series and a new Fantastic Four series.
Which would perfectly rejuvenate, the Avengers thing, because I'm sure they'll do a good job of whatever, but it looks like this deal is actually going through.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see the X, because it's Infinity War, but without the X-Men.
You could get an AVX. You could get an Avengers vs. X.
Oh! Or I think
that just gets me so excited.
You could get Civil War that actually had the characters from Civil War in it.
Yeah,
it's like what I always said. I wish they'd managed to work a deal before now, just to have been able to pull in
Hugh Jackman's
Wolverine. I don't care about the rest of the X-Men, but to pull in Hugh Jackman's Wolverine into the Avengers films, even into these next couple of films,
that would have been great.
Because I would have loved to have seen his Wolverine interact with the rest of that crew. I think, and he's such a key, key Avenger as well, especially in a lot of these stories. That is, it's disappointing.
But apart from obviously Patrick Stewart and even Ian McKellen as Magneto, the casting of Kelsey Grammer as Beast and now Sophie Turner as Jean Grey is just perfect. It's so
really
good.
Yeah.
So you would hope that they would transfer across with the franchise, but I mean, it's all coming back under the.
But now we've got the
X-Men timelines are mixed enough already. And you
like
know what
I say,
mean,
we've got the Infinity Gauntlet, so anything's possible.
Yeah, that's
so,
a good point.
Easily just pull them in from another
the
dimension.
Most tacky super object in history, the Infinity Gauntlet. Let's make it gold and spangly.
Brings the kids in. It's shiny.
Let's actually get something that would look better if it came out of a cracker.
So true, so true. But anyway, Barry Allen.
I'm taking Quicksilver.
I think I'll take Quicksilver as well. And it is purely just on the fact that he's so slimy and he would slip. He'd slip through whatever Barry Allen had set up. He might die at the end of it, mind you. But depends if Joss Whedon's writing him.
He would capitulate and then betray the trust that he had built up.
Yeah.
And Barry would just be standing there agog.
Yeah. Stabbed to death.
Stunned that how someone could be. How can you be so untrustworthy?
so very true. Yeah. No, I think that's that. Called it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what would your fight be?
Oh, wait, Luke. Sorry. Who would you take in that one? Quicksilver?
Oh, yeah.
Same.
Sound.
Yeah. My fight club would be Captain Caveman.
All right.
Oh, okay. And Dr. Manhattan.
Oh. Captain Caveman versus Dr. Manhattan.
I mean, Dr. Manhattan has complete control over
everything.
Yeah, matter and energy and everything.
As I said before the piece started, my fight club would be very brief. Although Captain Caveman does live in a cave on top of a van.
He does. If he can do that, you can do anything.
Yeah.
And he does have very enthusiastic young female sidekicks.
He does.
Yeah.
And Zowie, Cavey.
Whereas Dr. Manhattan has problematic relationships with women.
He does.
Yeah. But then also, Dr. Manhattan sees absolutely everything that sometimes he's so preoccupied by everything else that he doesn't see the obvious thing going on underneath his nose.
I think he'd try and win the race.
Yeah.
And then he'd like contrive some situation to win the race. And then Caveman would go, bang,
Captain
smack.
Caveman does have a giant club.
Does. He would just ruin him. Yeah. That's
See, I knew that you wouldn't have a pre-built answer for particular combo.
And Captain Caveman, he gets blown up all the time and everything.
He does.
As
he
well.
Seems quite resilient.
So he's just as resilient, really, as Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah. And I'm not entirely sure it's humanoid. It's generally just hair and a nose.
A hair and a nose, yeah.
It's kind of like me.
It's just like a hipster.
Hmm.
Oh, good.
I do think.
It's like a van-dwelling hipster with a club.
With a club, yeah.
Versus Dr. Manhattan.
Are they both naked?
Naked underneath all the hair.
I
think so. Yeah.
He's got a sort of cousin it thing going on, doesn't he? Yeah.
I mean, if...
I like that whole Greek wrestling vibe that they've got going on there.
Captain Caveman was... in a film, would his wang also be out?
It probably would be, but you would never know.
I'm not preoccupied by superhero wangs or anything,
but you would never tell.
You could.
I'm going to go with Captain Caveman because
I think so too.
Because thinking about it, he's a caveman who has no formal education, and yet, like, obviously he's probably a mechanic, and can also so he's probably smarter than Dr. Manhattan. Because he's a physicist who grew up in civilization. Captain Caveman comes and does all this, puts his house on top of a van.
His age...
Even though he presumably has been transported from a Stone Age.
His age and wisdom would be in his favour.
Well, I'm calling it.
Yeah. And also, you know, there's bound to be some sort of energy absorption comes from all that here.
Yeah.
Really.
I'm going to go for Captain Caveman.
Yeah, I think I'm going Captain Caveman as well. I think he's going to be... that Manhattan will be just too preoccupied by, something contrived. Yeah. And
Manhattan would be too preoccupied by creating the Rebirth universe.
Oh, God. I forgot that's happening.
And Captain Caveman would speed up in his jaunty van, leap from his rooftop cave,
and whack him in the nadgers.
And bludgeon him to death with his prehistoric club.
I'm very conflicted about the new Watchmen thing.
Yeah.
Very conflicted.
The first part was very interesting.
Was it?
Part of me says, leave Watchmen alone.
Yeah.
The other part of me says, they're not going to leave Watchmen alone. Why would you leave such a huge property alone when you can make millions of pounds from it?
Yeah.
So
it's just, it was so perfect.
As long as they execute it well,
yeah,
it's not Watchmen. That's fine. It. Watchmen stands on its own as a thing. The before Watchmen series stands on its own as a thing. That was of variable quality. Some of it was really good, and some of it was a little bit disappointing. And you know what? Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, I saw that when I came in and went, oh,
Doomsday Clock.
Now I'm thinking about
it. As long as it's brilliant, I don't see it as being the same thing as Watchmen. It's got characters from Watchmen.
Do you know, Watchmen started off, it was meant to be a whole bunch of characters who they bought, and then they couldn't.
They didn't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
And they'd shelved them for ages.
Alan Moore appropriated the characters from Watchmen from previous comic book strips.
Yeah.
And created something wonderful from it.
Yeah. So it was itself a sort of, I bet some of those creators weren't happy their characters were being
absolutely
used. Yeah.
So it's these things, look, you've got to take yourself out of the politics of the situation and say, as a thing, is it going to be fantastic? Yeah. Well, let's look at the creative team.
Yeah.
It should be fantastic.
Well, Geoff Johns writing as well.
I don't know enough to know. Are they good? See, I don't know enough.
They
see,
are.
That's the thing.
Absolutely. So it should be fantastic.
Geoff Johns is currently he's Mr. DC.
All right.
He's wrote for almost all of them, I think, now. All the major DC characters. And his stories have always been top-notch, really good.
And it will be the biggest-selling comic this year.
Yeah.
And you can get that at Little Shop of Heroes on the Make It.
Yes, you can.
Come in and add it to your pick list. Start a pick list. Do that.
Do start a pick list.
Do we have any more fans?
But make sure you pick up your pick list.
Yes,
oh, I was
definitely
terrible for that. So bad.
Yeah. I remember I left it 3 months because I didn't realise 3 months had gone by because I was working constantly, and then it was like, I've not had any of my comics. I was like, when was the last time I came in? And it was like, my pick list is gone because I'd left it so long, and I felt awful.
You deserve it, you deserve it.
Yeah, but life happens, and got it back, and I'll make sure I'm in every month now.
You've been permitted.
Every month, but that's because if I don't, I miss them. Absolutely. It's now part of my monthly cycle. I get paid, come in here, grab them, and then sit down for a couple of hours and read through my comics. And
what a wonderful way to spend an afternoon.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes I do. I'll sit and keep them for 2 or 3 months and have a build-up and then just sit one day, and that's all I do, and absorb it all. Mm. But shall we bring this to a close?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else to say, guys?
No, I've got Captain Caveman in, I've got Miley Cyrus in, I'm a happy man.
Excellent. Lou?
No, it's been great, and thank you very much, I've really enjoyed it.
No, thank you for coming and chatting to us.
Yeah, it's been fantastic, really, thanks.
And Comic-Con, we're looking forward to it. We've obviously said, we're going to come along and bring a couple of mics and
fantastic
annoy people.
That's what we do.
And just see what happens there. We'll be there. There's going to be tons of folk there. Check it out. £10 a ticket.
£10 a ticket.
Yeah.
And £5 for...
£5 for younglings.
Younglings.
Okay. And under fives are free.
Awesome. And that's the 3rd of March 2018.
3rd of March 2018.
Cool. Okay. And I think it brings me to that time where I have to ask Jamie, what's this week's motto?
Oh, Christ, I hadn't even thought of this. I'm trying to think of something comic book related.
Oh Christ, I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah,
is our stock answer whenever the bank or our accountant says something to us.
Well, you know what? That's a great motto to go on then. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye bye now.
Bye.
The background noise you heard about 5 minutes ago was the sound of commerce.
The sound of...
It's the sound of commerce, yes.
It's like that real world feel, you know.
Yes.
That's what we like.
Another coin dropped onto Scrooge McDuck's giant pile of coins.
Don't get me started on that intro.
We've been here before.
That intro, since I was a kid, you can't dive into a giant pile of coins. You just kill yourself.
Or you would just slide down to the bottom of said pile of coins.
Yeah. And then you'd be all broken bones, and then they might slowly pile on top of you, and then you're...
But you would...
Suffocate.
Die. Yeah.
But happy. He's a duck. That's annoyed me since I was a kid.
He's a duck. It might be different for ducks.
Coins off a duck's back.
That's the famous saying.
Maybe they're very waterproofing also is coin-proofing.
Yeah.
I'm not encouraging people to start throwing coins at ducks.
We're going to get in trouble one of these days. Anyway, right.